Joining me in studio now for a closer look at the equity space is Rowan Williams from Nitrogen Fund Managers. Rowan, thanks so much for joining us today. So
pleasure.
We talk about earnings season being in focus, but there are distinctions to be made, with analysts having downgraded their European earnings estimates ahead of the first quarter results season, while US companies are moving in the opposite direction, expected to deliver a stellar set of results. So it's really a tale of two halves at the moment.
Yeah, so what is quite nice is that we're moving a little bit back to fundamentals. We've been sort of a lot of macro noise that we've been experiencing in the marketplace. Initially, a potential trade war, which seems to be abating, and then sort of the concerns and attack in Syria and the retaliation there. So now we can move back to fundamentals, which really should be underpinning the valuations. And I guess that's what we're looking for, is whether the earnings will deliver and exceed expectations. So I think there's quite a lot of optimism in the US for strong and firm numbers, and I think the initial indications have been fairly good. The Netflix numbers, for example, were very good. We saw the share price react very strongly. What we have seen is some positive comments out of the central bank, the ECB, in terms of the outlook for Europe. So I think that's a sort of a slower recovery story, but still has some potential upside as well.
Having said that, though, what is interesting is that we've had the latest Bank of America Merrill Lynch survey of fund managers showing signs of caution amidst all this optimism as well. I mean, investors cutting their equity allocation to an 18-month low and increasing their cash balances. So what are you making of that kind of positioning amidst it all?
Yeah, so I think what we've seen is really a theme where the equity markets have got very full and fully priced, and on a broad range of measures, they look quite expensive. We are seeing a tightening of the cycle. There has been a rate increase. We're expecting up to two more in the US, and so we have seen the long bond yields move up. So that obviously is a little bit of a headwind for equity prices. And so I think there has been quite a lot of profit taking. The market, the S&P, did incredibly well last year. It was a great year to be in stocks. And if you look at it, some of the stocks, I think, have got a bit of ahead of themselves. The future expected return is not very high. It's a chance to take profits.
And what that lightening of positions does is inversely present more opportunity as well. So where exactly are you identifying opportunity right now?
So what we have seen is, because of these sort of fluctuations, and there have been sellers, there have been buyers, there's some sort of underpin in terms of if prices fall too low, you have seen buyers come into the market. So we have really been trading those tops and tails, and being opportunities to add when people are getting a little bit pessimistic. They also have been a bit euphoric. The South African story as well has been quite up and down. The JSE is doing really well this year, I mean this month in particular, but has been up and down a lot. So it has been quite a nice traders market, which we've been taking advantage
absolutely.
Of.
Absolutely. I mean, resources today getting a nice boost, as I highlighted earlier, from stronger metal prices on the back of that weaker dollar. So that offering the markets nice support, along with encouraging economic data that's filtered through locally. I want to draw attention to some company news, though, because Hammerson has said that it's decided not to proceed with the deal for Intu in light of updated information in the current market dynamics within the UK. Of course, the market seeing Intu's price really come under pressure on the back of that. What have you made of that? And do you see this now presenting further opportunity on the flip side of that news to have Hammerson stand front and center as a takeover target once again?
Yeah, I guess it does put the companies back in play. I guess Hammerson made the approach to Intu. It's been quite interesting. Intu actually also went ex-dividend or ex-distribution today, so that was part of the decline in the share price, so maybe a little bit looked worse than it actually was. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, Hammerson, they're not going to support or tell their shareholders to actually vote for the offer. So the offer's sort of in process. So it's a little bit of a strange situation, but does point to a very difficult retail environment in the UK in particular, and those centres having a very difficult future ahead of them. And so they do need to do something. So it does put the companies both in play. I think Hammerson obviously was sort of thrown by the Klépierre approach, and it was interesting, a lot of analysts saying that Klépierre's actual approach to Hammerson was to just undo the Intu transaction, which they seem to have succeeded.
So with that success coming through, do you see Klépierre coming through with a higher bid?
I guess there is that potential. Hammerson feel that the assets are worth a lot more than Klépierre had indicated in terms of the initial and the revised offer. So there is a chance in terms of the U.S. Takeover rules, there's the put up or shut up clause. So I think they cannot make an approach for 6 months.
Very, very quickly, a Mediclinic trading update out today. The market's receiving very nicely, up 7.4% by the finish, top performer on the top 40 index. So what's your view on Mediclinic?
Yeah, so Mediclinic's been quite a tough story for some time, really driven by the issues and the challenges they've had in Abu Dhabi and in the Emirates region. And really, I guess, the update giving the market confidence that they are turning that situation around. It looks like it's slightly ahead of where they said it would be in terms of the pace of the turnaround. Also importantly, margins in Abu Dhabi are going to be higher than expected by about 2 percentage points, which I think the market really liked.
Well, we didn't even have time to get into the executive exodus that we've seen across the board. Rebosis, Imperial seeing their CEOs resign, Johan van Zyl stepping down as well. What's your stock pick right now?
We like Remgro. One of its main assets is Mediclinic, and we saw that move quite strongly. By the end of the day, Remgro had moved up, but a great portfolio asset's a good time to get in.
Well, let's leave it there. Thanks so much, Rowan, for having joined us in studio this evening. Of course, Rowan Williams is with Nitrogen Fund Managers. A delegation of Eskom executives led by interim CEO Phakamani Hadebe has been briefing MPs on the company's financial results to the end of March. The utility's acting chief financial officer Caleb Kassim today saying that Eskom would continue to face going concern challenges in the current year. And earlier today, I caught up with Kulupa Siwe, spokesperson at Eskom, to take a look at how or just how fine a line Eskom is walking right now in the midst of not only constrained capital expenditure, but coal shortages too.
As far as our going concern issues are concerned, we are actually now beginning to bring Eskom back to normalcy. You'll remember that earlier in the year, we needed about 20 billion rand to stay afloat. Currently, we have received or raised about 43 billion rand from the market, local market, that is. So clearly, things are beginning to turn for the better. The issues that we're grappling with now are not necessarily related to the finances. It's the issues are related to the shortage of coal at 7 of our power stations, which is a concern, which is a matter of concern, and management is basically dealing with this matter. And also through the National Treasury, they have been informed already, where essentially we're asking for permission from the National Treasury for them to grant us permission to issue the contract, so that we can fill that gap, which has been left, among others, by some of the mines that are experiencing difficulties, including the ones that belong to the Gupta family.
Before we get to that coal supply situation, Kulu, of course, Eskom's irregular expenditure is expected to spike for the year to the end of March. And, of course, that has been hindering your ability to meet monthly contractual obligations, even though these are legacy contracts that are working their way through the system. So to what extent are you falling back in that respect?
Well, for us, it's not necessarily falling back necessarily. It's, as you correctly said, these are things that have happened before, but now some of them are surfacing now. Management, together with the new board, are dealing with those matters so that when we now go to the international markets, including the local markets, in terms of getting new money for the new financial year, which has now started now in 2018, we need 72 billion rand. Before we start going to the market, we need to make sure that our house is clean. So essentially, some of the things that are cropping up now are things that have happened before, some of which are beginning to surface at the moment.
I ask the question because, as you highlight, you've got your power stations with coal stockpiles that are lower than levels required. So what capacity, realistically speaking, does Eskom have to purchase more coal where you're already constrained in terms of capital expenditure?
So in terms of our fleet of power stations, many of them are generally in good condition. So we have secured over 87% of the requirements. So what we need now in terms of the seven power stations that we mentioned is about 3 million tons of coal that we need, especially now that we're heading into winter. So once we get that amount, 3 million tons, it will mean that we do have enough stockpiles, and then we will be able to go through winter without any problem. I must also make a comment around some of the reports we have seen where people are saying there's going to be load shedding. From our end as Eskom, I suppose our guiding principle really is maybe say coming from an Irish poet, Oscar Wilde. He once said that we are all in the gutters, but some of us are looking at the stars. So while some people correctly so are concerned about load shedding, we as Eskom are looking at the stars, which is the solutions. The solutions that we're coming up with include, among others, that we're diverting coal from the stations that are having more than enough to these ones that we mentioned, the seven ones. And then we also have diesel as a buffer or a backup. And then we also are, as we say, are in the process of getting the necessary approvals from Treasury so that we can issue the contract and get enough coal at our power station.
What response have you received from Treasury, Kulu, as far as the go-ahead on something like this is concerned? Because you're looking at purchasing coal without having to go to tender.
Well, Treasury generally is amenable. They have they do understand the position that we are coming from, and but obviously we'll have to allow them to go through their own internal processes before they can give us an answer. But from the initial discussions that we have had, they understood where we are coming from, and if things go well, very soon. I'm not in a position to say exactly when, but obviously we have to wait for them. But it looks like things are heading towards the right direction. But from our end, we have made our case very clear that we really would like to sort of cover the space which has been left by some of the problems coming from Tegeta, but obviously some of the companies as well. It has to be said that the problems are not necessarily caused by Tegeta per se. They are contributing. The other companies are failing to give us more coal. They want us to invest more money into the mine.
As you pursue that, and of course as you pursue an interim recovery plan where coal is being moved from stations that do have healthy stockpiles to stations that have insufficient stock, Kulu, part of the criticism has been that Eskom has concentrated too much on Medupi and Kusile and neglected cost-plus mines that require Eskom to actually invest in infrastructure like mine shafts. So as you move forward, to what extent are we seeing a shift in that regard, and Eskom able to make investments where needed?
Well, Alicia, one of the contentious issues that Eskom has been dealing with for many years now, you'll remember that at least 2 or 3 years ago, Eskom was saying to the mining houses that all we want is coal. We have no business investing into mines that are not belonging to Eskom. So these mines, for example, and this is what was said before, was to say that during times when things were looking good, they were obviously, Eskom was investing in these mines, they were making money, they were making their own profits, and nothing was coming to Eskom, except them obviously were wanting us to buy more coal. Now that Eskom is under strain, we are saying, we've been investing in this mining operations of yours, help us as well. We need more coal, and especially now that we are going into winter. But all of that is water under the bridge. We now have a new board, a new management. We are having fresh discussions with these mining houses, and I'm sure there will be a better outcome, not only for Eskom, but for all of us as a country, so that we don't have to experience the outages that we saw in 2014 and 2008.
Well, that was Kulu Pasiwe, spokesperson at Eskom. We're heading into a quick break right now, but when we come back, Bronwyn and the Deutsche Welle team takes us through international news making headlines today, including German prosecutors raiding Porsche and Audi in a diesel probe. So stay with us. Welcome back. Well, Porsche is the latest car maker to be caught up in the diesel emissions scandal, with German prosecutors carrying out raids at 10 locations in southern Germany. Let's cross to Bronwyn now, who has the Deutsche Welle team standing by at the Frankfurt Stock Exchange for more on that and other news making headlines today. Bronwyn.
Thanks, Alicia. Let's start off with news from Germany. Investigators have raided the offices and homes of former and current managers at Porsche. That's due to suspicions of diesel emissions fraud. So for a closer look at the story in more detail, let's cross to the Frankfurt Stock Exchange, where Daniel Koop from Deutsche Welle is standing by. Daniel, thanks so much for your time today. So with this news from Porsche, some are suggesting that diesel cheating is becoming the norm rather than the exception, and markets are starting to take events like this in their stride.
Yeah, exactly. Another sad day, another sad story here for the automobile industry. Investors here already knew to rather bad news about this topic. This rate is actually different if we compare this with others. I mean, we have seen rates happening at every German car maker so far. It seems that for the first time, a management board member still in office could be facing those investigations. In many cases before, investigators were always looking or questioning board members that were not anymore working for the company. We have not learned who they were exactly looking for. Porsche has 7 active board members, but it seems that the CEO of Porsche, Oliver Blume, was not among the ones they were actually looking for. This was a big investigation. I can tell you more than 160 police officers and more than 30 federal prosecutors were part of the raid, which was happening at different locations in Bavaria and also in the federal state of Baden-Württemberg. Porsche has stated that those searches were indeed taking place, that investigators took a closer look at different documents and also confiscated some of them.
Sticking with news from the automotive sector, European car sales are at their weakest in 5 years, with the downturn being led by the UK. That's obviously as Brexit nervousness continues to weigh, but declines were also recorded in Italy and Germany. Is this trend likely to continue, Daniel?
Well, Dieselgate is certainly a big topic. Investors still don't really trust most of the automobile companies. And e-mobility, we also got very interesting numbers about that. Mostly in the e-mobility sector, Germany and also other European car makers are way behind. The latest numbers show once again that mostly China is way ahead when it comes to produce e-cars. The only country, and I think this is very interesting, with very strong e-car sales is Norway. In the first quarter, they sold more than 142,000 new e-cars. That's a big plus of 154%. And yes, the biggest car sales dropping we have seen were taking place in the UK, a minus there of 16%. There are a couple of issues to take into consideration. Brexit is certainly a key factor here.
And then before we end off, let's quickly take a look at the currency market, specifically emerging market currencies. The Turkish lira, one of the worst performers in that basket. Economists saying that the lira's slide is due to alarm over inflation. What's your assessment of this, Daniel?
Yes, the currency market is very much under pressure at the moment. Mostly the Turkish lira has been lately in a free fall. 1 lira is not even worth 0.2 euros at the moment. Global uncertainty is troubling the currency. Now we are hearing that we'll have early elections taking place in Turkey. Those were originally scheduled for 2019. Now Erdogan was announcing just today that they will be already taking place this year in June. Let's see how all of this is going to affect the currency. But the real problem is even much deeper. One big problem: Turkish imports chronically and really chronically exceed export. It is very interesting when you also take a closer look at that issue from another side. From the euro point of view, the picture is actually reversed. The euro rises and rises against the lira. Meanwhile, 5.19 lira, I was just checking it, is now 1 euro. That's more than ever before. The government is trying to deny that there could be a strategy behind this. Donald Trump was talking about that last week. When this was happening for the first time, they said this is only a temporary situation, and it's also related to the low liquidity in the financial market. Now you mention it, the inflation rate is extremely high in Turkey, more than 10%. So this could be another reason. But yes, investors are monitoring all of this very closely, even warning that an overheating of the economy could possibly happen.
Daniel, we've unfortunately run out of time, so we have to leave it there for today. But Daniel Koop is from Deutsche Welle, and that's a wrap of your global markets news. Alicia, it's back to you.
Thanks, Bronwyn, and that's where we leave things with you for this half hour. Coming up after the break, it's you and your money, and I'll see you back at 7 o'clock with your news.